time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
All right, welcome to today's episode of Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky, and today we're going to be talking about teen sleep issues with Jenny Bumstead, a sleep coach who works with teen sleep issues. So, Jenny, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Andrew.
I'm so grateful that you had the time to take to join us today. And, you know, teen sleep issues are certainly a unique topic, very different from many of the things that we talk about regularly. And so can you tell me just what got you into working with teen sleep issues in the first place?
Well, I started off with younger children, starting off with babies, and it just sort of progressed from there. And I worked with the health visitors, which is 0 to 5, then the school nurses. And working with school nurses, they go up to sort of 16, but I also worked for a specialist sleep service, which went up to 17. So I started to learn more about teen sleep, and they're actually one of my favorite groups of children, young people rather, to work with, although they're very unique in the things that they come across. So yeah, I really enjoy working with teens.
Great, great. So give us a little bit of taste of the differences that you see with teens and their relationship to sleep, as you would see. Maybe kind of give us an overall view. You've got babies, you've got youngsters, you've got teens, you've got adults. How do they fit within this big picture?
So with teens, there's so many different things going on. So that they've got rapidly changing bodies. So all the things are changing for them, how they look, how they sound, how they feel. Their emotional regulation is quite often sort of up the wall. They don't know quite how to deal with things. So you've got those along with that. They experience peer pressure perhaps to stay up later, gaming, or to watch the latest shows that are on later. So they have peer pressure on top of that. They also experience a shift in their body clock at around adolescence, and that could be up to 2 hours long. So say a young adult who's been going to sleep at sort of 9:30, all of a sudden they're not able to go to sleep until 11:30. And then because they, you know, their parents might be saying go off to bed, and you know, then they can't sleep for 2 hours. And then, as you know, they then get worried about not sleeping and how they're going to cope with the next day. And the same as kind of adults do, that makes it worse. And the sort of delayed sleep gets worse and worse and worse. So, you know, there's also body image and things like that. All of those things can add to sort of stress and pressure. And then they worry about things. So they're more prone to kind of depression, anxiety, so mental health problems as well. So it's a big mixed kind of bag of what's going on. And I think with teens, they get some more autonomy. Mm-hmm. So as a younger child, a parent might say, right, you know, it's 8:00, it's bedtime, off you go. You can't really do that with a teenager, even if you have set rules. You can send them off to bed if you like, but they're unlikely to go off to sleep because they've got their own autonomy. They might have phones and screens and gaming and so on in their room. So their autonomy makes it very different from working with the younger school age group. So I think that's what makes them really interesting to work with, sort of trying to get them on board. Whereas with a younger child, you'd have to get the parent on board. And mm-hmm. then the parent enforces the rules with a teenager. The parent might be so keen, but the young person may not. And then you have the conflict of how you get them on board and how you get them to change their sleep habits to a more positive way. Teenagers right. also engage in sort of energy drinks, vaping, smoking, experimenting with alcohol. And, you know, as you know, they're all stimulants. And stimulants can then keep them up at night. There's an increased use in social media as they hit teenagers as well. So all of those things, mix them up in a big bag, and you're going to get some sleep problems.
Right.
So, yeah.
Wow. So tell me this. In your work, you know, I'm sure you've got families with teens come to you. They say, we're having trouble sleeping. But how much work do you do with conflict with the family and the teen? Because if the teen is saying, it's too early to go to bed, I'm not tired, and I just want to stay up and play video games or whatever, and then the family, maybe they have a more structured, you know, set of rules that they want. Does that often result in a lot of conflict that you have to see and deal with?
Yes, and I think you have to manage parental expectation quite a lot. So I'm not saying that they should be allowed to stay up late and do whatever they like. There's lots of things that families can do, turning the Wi-Fi off, et cetera, encouraging young people to leave their phones outside and that kind of thing. But managing expectations, and if you're able to explain to parents that actually there is a shift in a body clock, and that's why your 14-year-old is no longer able to fall asleep at 8:30, that often would be a sort of light bulb moment for them. And by making them go to bed, if they will, they're kind of adding to the situation where they're going to bed and they can't sleep. Mm-hmm. So yes, there is a lot of conflict, and that's why it's important if you work with families of young people to engage both the parents and the young person together. And it's often a compromise. So the parents might want them in bed by 10, but the young person, if you do sleep diaries with them, isn't falling asleep until 11. Then it's kind of, well, let's work this out, what would be appropriate, and sort of getting a compromise between them. But yes, there's often a conflict in there. And like I said, it's managing expectations and letting the parents know that, yes, you can put rules and regulations in place, but it's about encouraging your young person to make positive changes and what would encourage your young person to make those changes. So it's finding that sort of kryptonite for them. Mm-hmm. So like with someone that's really sporty, you can sort of talk to them about sleep education and the fact that their coordination is impaired if they're not sleeping as much as they should be, and maybe they're a really keen footballer or, you know, something like that. And that might click and go, well, actually, I might get better at football if I sleep more. That kind of thing. And also weight is a big issue. If you're not sleeping very well, then teenagers do tend to eat sugary foods. They rely on sort of energy drinks to keep them going. And a lot of teenagers, although you don't want to push the kind of weight and body image, if there is something that they're concerned about, you could explain that, you know, sleep deprivation encourages you to eat and unhealthy foods just because that's how it works. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's finding what motivates that person. If they're really academic but their grades are falling, which, you know, I've worked with those young people, you can say that actually, you know, sleep is like brain power. It's downloading the things that you've learnt in the day to your hard drive, and, you know, your grades might improve if you're able to improve your sleep. So it really is about motivating the young person, getting the parents on board to celebrate the small things that the young person is able to change. So yeah, that I think that's really important. But yeah, it's not a magic wand that you wave and everyone's happy. Sometimes it is about compromise. What will the parents sort of compromise with? Lots of parents get really frustrated at the laying in for hours and hours at the weekend, and having a compromise get up regular wake up time is a really important part of working with teenagers. And probably the hardest, because they like to lay in, don't they? Teenagers and young people, they do like to lay in. But so we couldn't do that with a sleep management program, and then make a slight adjustment for the weekend so they feel like they're getting something, say a maximum of an hour and a half they're able to lie in at the weekends. But to keep them on track, they would need to have a regular sleep-wake cycle. And that's mm-hmm. a tough thing to do because they're more social as well, aren't they, as teenagers, whether they're going out partying or, you know, that kind of thing. And they don't want to be in bed regularly at 11. They want to be able to stay up at 12, 1 o'clock or whatever. So it's sort of finding a balance and compromise with young people to give them some control over what they're doing, because teenagers like control. And if it's all taken away, becomes a conflict, which then, you know, it's not a great atmosphere at home, and, you know, that makes sleep worse. So compromise.
Right.
Yes, definitely.
So then let me make sure that I have this clear. So when someone comes to you to talk about the sleep issues with their teen, is it typically the parents that are bringing the teen to you, or is it the teen that says, I would like to see someone about my sleep issues?
It's generally the parent, or they've been referred through because from education, because their school attendance has dropped. And obviously that causes big problems, and the parents get into trouble in the UK if their child's not attending school. So sometimes it's been pushed on the parent, so the parents will then seek support. So, yeah, it's when they get to college, because I've worked with college children as well, young people, rather not children, but they will then take responsibility for themselves, and they might refer themselves. But what school-age children, in England, it's up to 16. It's generally the parent or education or someone like that, rather than the young person coming forward and go, oh, hello, I need some support with my sleep.
Wow. So I can only imagine then, just by some of the things that you've been describing already, that when you start working with a new client, you're working with the teen, you're working with the parents. So you probably have to do some conflict management in there, it sounds like.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, you definitely have to do conflict management. And, you know, teenagers can be quite vocal in what they do want. And as I said before, it's about compromise. So if the youngster wants to play on their games till 11, but the parent wants them off by 9 o'clock, it's about saying, well, okay, well, how about sort of 10:15? Would that be appropriate? And then you feel like you're giving the parent something, but also the young person feels that they're not having everything taken away. And I think if you go in too strict, too quickly, then it just results in an escalation, and the young person could actually refuse to do any part of it, and then any part of the sleep management plan, and then no one's got anywhere. So nobody wins, everyone loses. So yeah, compromise and conflict management is an important part. Yeah, definitely.
Right. So, you know, that raises another question, which I haven't thought about before, but I'm kind of baffled about, which is this. So we know the teens, just because their circadian clock changes after puberty and also they're naturally staying up later, right?
Yeah.
And so their parents may say to them, okay, well, you know, you got to go to your room by a certain time, and the teen is not ready to sleep. So the teen probably is going to be in their room, like you said, either playing video games, maybe scrolling on their mobile phone, whatever it may be. And now they're getting exposed to all of this blue light, which typically is something that would keep a person awake as opposed to helping them sleep. So I'm wondering, you know, does that then lead to sleep problems? You know, they're staying up because they're not sleepy. Then it's time for them to go to sleep, but they've now been exposed to all this blue light. And I'm curious about what problems that may cause. But before you answer that question, I'm going to take a quick commercial break. And we'll come back and we'll start talking about that. So stay tuned.
Okay.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, this is Andrew Kolsky with Sleep Science Today. We're back talking with Jenny Bumstead. We're talking about teens and sleep. And before the commercial break, I asked the question about teens and blue light and how it may or may not affect them. So, Jenny, your answer.
Okay, so traditionally or historically, or recent historically, it's blue light is a no-no. Teenagers process light much faster than adults do, so the blue light can affect sleep and the production of melatonin, because blue light blocks the production of melatonin, or the hormones that start that sequence off. So up to now, it's always been a complete no-no. Don't watch screens 1 hour before sleep, and that's the advice that I've always given. But recently there's been some new research come out that is sort of contradicting that, and I think it's, for me, it's new research, and it may or may not be correct. I'm sure the research is correct, but however, I personally feel that, like caffeine, can affect some people massively. They can have a sip of coffee and then not be able to sleep for hours and hours, and other people can have a shot of espresso and then nod off to sleep for 12 hours. So surely it's more personalized than no screens for everybody. And I do, when I work with teens, I do encourage them to switch off their screens before they go off to sleep. For children with neurodisability, for example, that's a different kind of case, I think, because for some, the only way that they can wind down and switch off and sort of turn the other thoughts off is to watch some form of videos or something like that. That can be really helpful for them. And then if you take that away, then they're really hypervigilant before they go to bed. And as you know, that's not helpful for sleep. So for me, I do work individually with them. I do try to encourage them not to have screens for up to an hour before sleep. But it's not just the light. It is the content that is really, really important. So a lot of teens will be watching gaming, for example, is very fast paced, isn't it? Your brain sort of going mad on sort of working out your strategies and, you know, that kind of thing. It's very stimulating. So the first thing that you might do with a teen that's really reluctant to give up their screens is to say, would you swap the content? Would you watch something less sort of invigorating, if you like? And that's, again, that's part of the compromise to that. So yes, blue light does affect sleep. I truly believe that it does. Mm-hmm. New evidence is emerging that it's not as harmful as we've originally thought. However, the content of what you're watching on screens is equally as important. So for some, it can be a lifeline to help them decompress and, you know, be ready for sleep. And for others, it can stimulate them more so they're not ready for sleep. So it's a really important factor. And for teens, it's massive, because it's also the phones, having phones in their rooms. If you can encourage them to remove the phone from their room, most of them don't want that. And I worked with a family and I asked the young person to leave the phone with his parent, and he said no, because she'd look through my phone. And the mum said, well, no, I certainly wouldn't. So we came to a compromise that there was a plug outside his door, that he would charge it outside his room. And he agreed to do that, because the pinging and the light can disturb sleep. Right. And then if a young person, it's called FOMO, isn't it? It's a fear of missing out.
Yep.
And young people, there's a study in a sort of survey thing in the UK which looks at internet access and phone use in young people and adults in the whole of the UK. It's done every year, and the number of times that young people check their phones is horrific. It's at least 10 times a night if it's next to their bed, regardless of the time. So to kind of, you know, they want to look at Instagram, or if someone's posted something in the middle of the night, they're going to look at it because they don't want to miss out on the chance to maybe comment. Or, I mean, not all teens, but you know, you get the drift that having their phones in their room is distracting and can wake them from sleep.
Right.
Just the light flashing, even if you've got it on silent, it sometimes vibrates. It sometimes, so encourage the phones outside. With watching TV and gaming, I do try to encourage the young people to have a separate area in their room. So if there's a beanbag they can sit on, a desk they can sit at, if their room's big enough, a chair. Because a lot of teens do everything in bed, including eating. They'll take their food up. So they'll do everything but sleep in their bed. So if that can be separated, I watch TV in my chair or beanbag. I sleep in my bed. I eat downstairs with the family or at my desk if I must eat in my room, you know, that kind of thing. Separate that bed from watching screens, doing homework, all that, because homework's on a screen as well. So a lot will say, well, I've got homework to do. I must do it on my computer. That is a screen. Right. So, you know, being mindful of what screens can do and how they can affect your sleep is important. But if you put an out-and-out ban on a 16-year-old, it's unlikely to go down too well. So again, more compromise on that. You might start off with, I don't want to be without my screens for an hour before bed. You could start off, okay, let's say 45 minutes, then move it to 15, see how you manage, and then sort of gradually build it up to the hour as their sleep kind of improves. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I think about kind of screens. It's a really tricky one because they're so, young people today are so attached to their screens.
Absolutely.
Aren't
they? Yes,
they
absolutely.
They can't be separated from them.
You know, I think back, you know, showing my age when I was a kid, that we didn't have screens, you know. We had a phone that had a plug into the wall and you had to stand next to it to use it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I survived, you know. I was able to grow up and nothing bad happened to me if I wasn't on my phone 24/7. But, you know, it seems like that's changed over the last, you know, decade or so. But you know, the concept raises another question for me. What do you, or have you ever come across someone who's like, you have some teens that are working really, really hard. They want to get the best grades they can get. They want to get into the best college they can get into. So they put a lot of time and effort into their schoolwork. And so I can imagine several scenarios where a teen knows they have a big test tomorrow, something very important they have to do at school. And so they're very nervous and anxious about it. They want to make sure that they study and they know the material well. So now you've run into this conflict where they feel the need to stay up because they want to do the studying. They want to know that they're prepared. But at the same time, that means that they're not taking the time to go to sleep. But if you took the studying away from them and said, no, you have to go to sleep, or showed them the research that if you stop studying an hour before bed and you give yourself time to sleep, you'll actually improve your memories. But now they have all this anxiety that they're not studying. And, oh my gosh, I'm wasting my time. So now they can't sleep because they're anxious. So have you dealt with that? And if so, what do you do in those cases?
Again, it is about compromise for that. So if a young person then ramps themselves up because they're worried about getting good grades in the morning, they feel that they should be studying. Writing down, having pen and paper or a physical book, I know those are sort of going out of fashion, which is really sad, isn't it? Because reading a chapter is less stimulating than looking at a screen which moves and so on and so forth. So, yes, I'll do the things that you said and say, you know, you need good sleep in order to sort of be able to memorize that. But if it's just before an exam, putting that too much into their heads will cause more anxiety, because if you say, you know, your memories won't download and you won't be able to remember anything if you don't sleep, that just increases their anxiety, not decreases it. So it's more about saying, okay, well, even if you don't sleep on the night as well as you want to on the night before your exam, you know that you can still get through it. You know that you know the subject. Just go in and try your best. And generally, they do much better than they think they will, don't they? It's more about the worrying about not sleeping and worrying about the exam that's making everything worse. But trying to not minimize it, but not catastrophize the fact that perhaps they won't have a good night's sleep. So, you know, you can give things like relaxation exercises, breathing exercises, mindfulness, things for them to try once they've put their studying down. Those are lots of resources that young people can actually use, so they could try those, but they often need practice. You can't all of a sudden become mindful the night before your exam. It's about, if I was doing a sleep management program with a young person that had exams coming up, I would try to do that in the sleep management plan in plenty of time for those exams. So for the in this country, the exams are generally in May. So you try and get in if you can before then, so they're more established. But I think trying to sort of catastrophize the fact that she's not sleeping and she's got exams, and, you know, if studying a little bit more slightly later helps her go off to sleep, then isn't that the compromise worth it? Rather mm-hmm. than worrying that she should be studying and I meant to be sleeping, that conflict of hers. So, yeah, it is quite, sometimes it's quite individual depending on the personality of the youngster. But, yes, again, I think it is about compromise and what that young person is prepared to do and how they feel if you're asking them to shut their computer an hour before. But could they read a book? Could they do some breathing exercises? Could they have a relaxing bath? All of those things, you need to make those suggestions instead of that and then going off to sleep. Does right. that make sense?
It does. And sort of an undertone in there is sort of, it sounds like teaching the parents how to address conflict in a way by addressing the actual issues that are, you know, most pertinent to their teen, as opposed to yeah. just trying to set a rule and then sticking to it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of parents, this is a generalization, but sometimes they don't listen to what the problem is. And I think it's being a listening ear. They won't necessarily be able to help with the problem, but being a listening ear, acknowledging what the issues are and celebrating any small changes that that young person can make to their routine that may help them. So, you know, they may want them to go to bed really early and take all their equipment out of their room and, you know, eat regular meals and so on and so forth. But the only thing the person has been able to do is charge their phone outside their room. Say, right. well done, that's brilliant, you've made a step forward. And that encourages them rather than nagging them to go, well, I told you to remove your television and I told you to do this and I told you to do that and you haven't done any of that. Just, well done for that small step. Let's see if we can do the next step. Do you know what right. I mean? Rather than inciting sort of more conflict, which then creates stress, which then means that they're not able to go to sleep.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
It's, again, we're back to conflict kind of resolution there, aren't we, sometimes? Yeah.
Well, so let me ask this. You mentioned a little while ago a sleep management plan. Mm-hmm. And so let me kind of put this in perspective for myself. So you've got your typical teen. Let's take a, you know, 13, 14-year-old boy, okay? Probably they're into video games and mm-hmm. they spend a lot of time in the room on video games. Probably they're eating in their room as well. Mm-hmm. Probably they're using caffeine stimulant drinks because they want to stay alert for their video game. Probably, in many cases, at least here in the U.S., they might be vaping certain mm-hmm. substances as well. So they've got all these things going on. So there's also then probably some conflict with the parents about, are you getting your homework done? You shouldn't be spending so much time in your room. I don't want you vaping. I don't want you, you know, drinking all these energy drinks. All these things are happening. And then, like you say, maybe they start to, their attendance at school starts to suffer. Their grades mm-hmm. start to suffer. But they're so focused on all these things they want to do. So here's I'm picturing sort of an average client who may come for your mm-hmm. services. So then you work with them to develop a sleep management plan, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So what I'd like to do is learn more about that. But before we do that, it's yeah. time for our commercial break. Yeah. So let's take a quick commercial break and we'll come back and we'll talk about dealing with the sleep management plan.
Okay.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
All right, Andrew Kolsky here with Sleep Science Today, talking about teens and sleep. And just before the break, we were talking with Jenny Bumstead about sleep management plans. So Jenny, can you tell us what is a sleep management plan and how do you use it?
Okay, so it depends on the sleep problem. So you described a young person that had lots of unhealthy sleep habits, such as vaping, eating in his room, that kind of thing. A sleep management plan looks at sleep hygiene and suggests different ways to introduce healthy sleep habits. For example, eating regular meals. I see lots of young people that perhaps don't eat at school, they don't drink throughout the day, so they're dehydrated. That would be, can you introduce regular meal times? Because that is one of the things that sets your body clock on the right sort of time frame. Do they have exposure to light? Because lots of the gamers, particularly the one you described before we went to the break, was sat in their room a lot. And particularly in the winter, it's dark. And they often are in the dark anyway, even in the summer with the curtains drawn. They're playing games, which are often dark. So they're not getting exposure to daylight. They're not getting out and exercising. So the programs will include things like that, getting exposure to light, draw your curtains in the morning, have plenty of light in the morning, go out and get some exercise during the day, but not too close to bedtime, eat regular meals. If you're vaping, then my suggestion would be, obviously you'd like them to give up, and the same with smoking, you'd like them to give up, but if they won't, I would ask them to swap to the zero nicotine. In the lead up to bedtime, in the few hours before bedtime, would they be prepared to do that? I would explain what the consumption of energy drinks does to them. It is a stimulant. Stimulant has a half-life that then takes hours and hours to get out of their bodies, and that affects their ability to go to sleep. But the actual management of it, so say this young person that you described, for example, because of the things that he was doing, he wasn't going to sleep until 1 a.m. in the morning. I would use something called an advancement program. So we'd keep a diary, and the diaries say that he's not falling asleep until 1 o'clock in the morning. Every day, he's not falling asleep until 1. So an advancement program is basically not letting him go to bed until the time he's actually falling asleep, which is 1 o'clock. Okay. So for 3 to 4 days, he will go to sleep, his bedtime will be 1 a.m. And then he'll get up for school and at the weekends at a regular time every single morning. So that might be if he's going to school in America and he has to be there at 7, it might be 6 o'clock. For a UK young person, it might be he has to get up at 7, so depending on where they are. And then once he's falling asleep within 30 minutes of laying down to sleep, we move him backwards to 12:45. And then 12:30, then 12:15. So it's a long program of kind of hoiking him backwards to a more normal bedtime. And all it's doing is his body has got used to going to bed but not going to sleep. And all the advancement does is I go to bed, I go to sleep. So the brain starts to go, wow, I go to bed, I go to sleep. And then slowly pulling them back. And we often use bright light therapy as well. In the morning. Oh. So have you heard of bright light therapy?
Yeah, but how are you using it with them?
So for 20 minutes in the morning, when they wake up in the morning, they have the light in their room somewhere or at the breakfast table. They don't have to stare at it. They just have the bright light in the room. They're really, really bright. Have you ever seen one? They're like 10,000 lux. So it's really bright. It just means that they're getting that bright light in the morning. It really helps to shift the body clock back, so the morning wake up hormones are released at the right time, which means the sleep hormones are also released at the right time, and that really helps with the advancement plan. And the idea being, say we set he's going to bed at 1, but the ideal bedtime for him is 11. We'd move him back to 11 bedtime by doing that advancement plan. And it really works. It's one of my favourite plans to do, as well as chronotherapy. So I've worked with a youngster that was he lost his place at college. He was sleeping from 6 a.m. till in the morning till 4 p.m. In the afternoon. And we did a chronotherapy program with him. Chronotherapy program is where you push a young person all the way through the 24-hour clock. So he's going, say he's going to bed, he's going to bed at 6 a.m. I wouldn't let him go to bed until 9 a.m. the first night, 9, 10, 11, 12, 12 a.m. the second night. So you move him on 3 hours. So it's easier to keep a young person up than it is to try and make them go to sleep earlier because of their body clock.
Right.
So in seven days, the chronotherapy program is complete. And then they should be back in a normal rhythm. And then as long as they keep healthy sleep habits, you might use bright light therapy on completion of a chronotherapy program to keep them in place. And sometimes if they're under a pediatrician, they can have melatonin for up to 3 months to keep them in place. So, yeah, and it can actually be life-changing for someone. For this young person that I worked with, he was going back into college. His parents said that he was a changed person. He was back to being happy-go-lucky. He was engaging in visiting family, going out socializing. But if you can imagine, if you're sleeping from 6 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon, you're missing out on a lot of time with your family. You're not eating properly. You're not eating at the right times. So they can be really, really helpful. And the other one would be sleep restriction. So that's where a young person, maybe I had another young girl, she was only 14, but she'd strict rules at home, no phones in her, so she did all the right things. She'd go to bed at 10, lights off at 10, and then she would not fall asleep until 2 o'clock in the morning. She would wake frequently in the night, and then she would have to be up for school at 7. So we did sleep diaries, worked out the amount of time she was in bed. So her sleep efficiency was really poor because she was spending so much time in bed, not actually sleeping. So you squash that time to the amount of time she's actually sleeping and then extend it outwards so that her body, again, learns, I go to bed, I go to sleep. I go to bed, I go to sleep. And that sort of changes it because she'd learn over a year, I go to bed and I can't sleep. And then I sleep for a bit and then I wake up. And then I feel really tired. And it's a really negative association with that. So, and stimulus control is another one where they, you know, that we use that alongside healthy sleep habits. So like for the young man you described, he was eating in his room, he was gaming in his room, as we talked about before. Have a separate space for those things, eat regularly, that kind of thing. So, yeah, and sometimes it's a combination, just depending on what comes up. But advancement, for me, is the one that I personally use the most, and it's really, really successful. And the kids love it. The young people love it because they're like, yes, I don't have to go to bed till 1 o'clock in the morning. The parents are like, oh, no, I can't do that. But when you explain that actually your young person is up until that time anyway, it's no different. It's just you can see them up rather than them laying in bed. Do you see what I mean? So, yeah, it's really successful, really helpful, but it takes a number of weeks to do. So I imagine after the school holidays that a lot of young people will need an advancement to bring them back in place for school because it's a long time because they're generally allowed to stay up later, eat when they like, that kind of thing. It's so the prime time for advancements is when they return to school after a long summer break.
And you know, really sort of the one of the main things about sleep is we talk about circadian rhythms, which are a natural thing. We talk about impact of light on that, but we also talk about a lot of behavioral things, like you're just saying. They're going to change their behaviors when they're out for the summer, and then they're going to have to change them back when they got to get back to school. So it's such a large element of sleep treatment is the behavioral part.
Definitely.
And you know, that leads me to another question for you then, which is this. So you've talked about the situations that occur and some ways to deal with it, but what about the motivation part? How do you deal with a teen who maybe is not motivated to follow the suggestions that you're offering?
I mean, I've worked with a lot of young people whose sleep problems are meeting their needs. So a young person that doesn't want to go to school is because there's something at school that they don't like about school. It's meeting their needs, so they don't want to change that sleep habit. It's fine for them. They're not bothered. It's the parents and school and authorities, etc., that are. So it is about finding the motivation for that young person. So it might be, you know, the young person at school actually can't wait to go to college where they've got more freedom, they wear their own clothes, all that kind of thing. So sort of talking to the young person about what they want to do in the future can be helpful. So you want to go to college, you might need to pass some exams in order to get to college. That might be enough, and it might not be. For young people aged sort of 16 in America, but it's 17 here when they drive. If you're sleeping at completely the wrong time, you're not going to be able to have driving lessons. That is one thing that you can motivate them with, you know, doing that kind of thing. It might be for the younger, particularly the younger teens, going on sleepovers or having sleepovers, things like that. That can be a motivator for them. With the younger kids, I personally use rewards all the time. So, because motivate, why would they bother to change their behavior if there's nothing in it for them? So motivators can be really helpful. So, you know, they don't work as well for teenagers if you're trying to say, right, you can have, you know, a younger person, you can, if you follow the new sleep routine, you can get a token to play an extra 10 minutes on your game. That would work really well with a school-aged child. But a teenager with autonomy, it doesn't work so well as. So it is about finding that motivation, whether it's sport, whether it's academia, whether it's, you know, one of those things, or driving, or when they want to get a job, for example. You know, you would need to be in a more, unless they're going to work night shifts, you know, then you need to be in a bit more of a formal pattern. But yes, you know, I think you can get through to them with some education, but not too much. If you nag and sort of lecture them, it doesn't go down well. So yeah.
Well, I appreciate the information, and actually we've run out of time for our episode today. So, you know, time goes quickly, but so much good information. And I really appreciate all the things that you've shared. You know, teens are in a very different place than the adults who have the concerns about them. So thank you for sharing all that. Thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for coming on as a guest. And I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.